I have a question for you. You know that specific frantic energy you get right before you leave for a vacation?
Oh, the pre-flight panic. It is a very specific state of being.
Exactly. You spend 3 weeks procrastinating on a project, just staring at the ceiling, drinking coffee. And then suddenly, because your flight leaves at 6:00 p.m. on Friday,
Yeah.
you somehow become this superhuman productivity machine.
You
You
do.
finish a month's worth of work in like 4 hours.
It's universal. And frankly, it's annoying that we can't harness that energy on a random Tuesday in March.
Right. Or think about the end of the year. The holidays are coming, the fiscal year is closing, and suddenly everyone is scrambling. Deals get signed, reports get filed, inboxes hit zero for the first time since January. It's like we collectively wake up.
And what's fascinating about that phenomenon is that the deadline is usually completely arbitrary. Whether it's your flight to Hawaii or the ball dropping on New Year's Eve, the world wouldn't actually end if you missed it. But psychologically, it is incredibly potent. The source material we are looking at today calls this an artificial constraint.
An artificial constraint. I love that term.
It's the idea that a hard, immovable deadline forces decision-making. It strips away the luxury of thinking about it later.
Right.
The end of a fiscal year isn't just a date on a calendar, it's a psychological catalyst. It forces you to look at your business or your career, really, and decide what stays, what goes, and what actually matters.
And that is exactly where we are going today. We are doing a deep dive into a comprehensive guide on business planning. Now, I know, business planning sounds like eating your vegetables.
Usually sounds like homework or a very boring meeting.
Exactly. But the way these sources frame it, it's different. It's not about coloring in the cells on a spreadsheet.
No.
It's about using that trigger, that artificial constraint, to reset the entire trajectory of an organization.
The mission here is really a shift in mode. Most businesses, and honestly, most people, spend their lives in survival mode. You're just reacting to the fires, swatting away problems as they pop up.
Yeah.
This guide is about moving from surviving to intentional pathways. It's about sustainable growth rather than just, holding your breath until the weekend.
So, whether you are running a startup, managing a team, or just trying to get your own side hustle off the ground, this applies. Let's unpack the first segment. The source starts somewhere unsexy, but apparently it's the foundation of everything. Financial hygiene.
The dreaded bookkeeping.
They use a phrase here that I think every computer programmer knows by heart: garbage in, garbage out.
It is harsh, but it is accurate, and it's
All
a
right.
huge problem for entrepreneurs.
How so?
Many business owners treat bookkeeping as a compliance task, something you do just to keep the tax man from knocking on your door. But if you view it that way, you are flying blind. If your financial data isn't accurate, your strategy is based on fiction. You can't build a map if you don't know where you're standing.
So when the source talks about closing the books, they aren't just talking about data entry, right? It's not just typing in receipts.
No, and this is where people get tripped up. The key word is reconciliation.
Okay.
That means comparing your internal records, what you think you spent and earned, against the external reality, which is your bank statement or credit card bill. You would be amazed at the drift that happens there.
What kind of drift?
Oh, duplicate subscriptions, mystery charges from vendors you stopped using, categorization errors where you think you're spending money on marketing, but it's actually going to software you don't use.
That categorization piece really stood out to me in the reading. The source suggests a specific framework for reviewing expenses that goes way beyond just saving money.
Right.
Because usually, when someone says expense review, I just hear stop buying coffee.
Right. The slash and burn approach. That is usually a mistake because you end up cutting muscle along with the fat. The source suggests you need to sort every single expense into three distinct buckets to really understand your business health.
Okay, let's walk through the buckets. Bucket number one.
First is the essential. These are the non-negotiables. Rent, hosting servers, utilities, the core software that runs your product.
The stuff you can't live without.
Exactly. If you cut these, the lights go out and the business stops.
Okay, that's survival. What is bucket two?
Bucket two is beneficial. This is the tricky one. These expenses aren't strictly survival-based, but they enhance productivity or growth.
So marketing would be in there.
Your marketing budget, your professional development courses, maybe upgrading to a faster computer, things that help but aren't life or death.
And the third.
The questionable, or as I like to call them, the orphaned expenses.
Orphaned expenses. That sounds sad.
It's sad for your bank account. These are the subscriptions you signed up for 2 years ago for one specific project and forgot to cancel.
We all have those.
the premium LinkedIn account for an employee who left 6 months ago. These are leaks. They provide zero value, but they drain cash silently every month.
I think we all have a few of those personal orphaned expenses floating around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I'm paying for a streaming service I haven't watched since 2019.
We all do it. But in a business, that can add up to thousands of dollars. But here is the twist in the source material that I found really insightful. They argue that sometimes, after this review, you should actually spend more money.
Wait, really? The goal of a financial review is usually to save.
Usually, yes. Yeah. But look at that beneficial bucket. Sometimes we starve that bucket because we're trying to be frugal. But think about it this way. If you run a design firm and your team is working on 5-year-old laptops that crash every hour, you are losing billable hours. You're frustrating your staff.
Right.
Spending $10,000 on new equipment, there isn't a cost. It's an investment in capacity. The source argues that strategic spending is just as important as strategic cutting.
That is a great reframe. It's about efficiency, not just hoarding pennies. Okay, so we've looked at money going out. Let's talk about money coming in, or rather, the money that should be coming in but isn't. Accounts receivable.
Ah, yes. The I earned this money, why isn't it in my bank account problem?
This is a massive stressor. You've done the work, you sent the invoice, but the cash is in limbo. The source offers a couple of tactical moves here. One of them is the psychology of the early payment discount.
This is basic behavioral economics, but it works. If you tell a client, pay me in 30 days or I'll charge you a late fee, that is a threat.
That's a negative.
It's
yeah.
Negative reinforcement. People naturally resist threats. But if you say, the bill is due in 30 days, but if you pay within 10 days, you can take 2% off the total, that's an opportunity.
You're flipping the incentive structure. You're giving them a win.
Exactly. And I know some business owners think, why would I give away 2% of my revenue? But you have to look at the cost of capital and the cost of your time.
Right.
Losing 2% is often much cheaper than chasing that client for 90 days, sending emails, stressing out, or having to float the cash flow yourself using a credit card with 20% interest. It motivates action.
But what about when they still don't pay, even with the discount? The source notes that those automated overdue invoice emails, the ones we all set up, might actually be part of the problem.
They are too easy to ignore. They look like spam. They become background noise in an inbox.
So what's the move?
The recommendation here is the personal touch. Pick up the phone.
It feels so old school to actually call someone about a bill. It feels awkward.
It is awkward, and that is why it works. It breaks the digital pattern, and importantly, it preserves the relationship. Often, a late payment isn't malice.
Right.
It's not that they hate you or want to steal from you. It's just an administrative screw-up on their end. Someone lost the PDF. A cheerful human phone call saying, hey, just checking on this invoice so I can keep my books clean, solves it instantly without the aggression of a bold red email.
I love that approach. Help me keep my books clean. It makes it about you, not them being deadbeats. But then the source goes to a darker place. It says sometimes you have to fire a customer.
A hard truth.
That sounds terrifying. Why would you ever turn away money?
Because not all revenue is created equal. This is a trap new businesses fall into constantly.
Okay.
If a client is chronically late, drains your support team with unreasonable demands, calls you on weekends, and barely offers a profit margin, they are actually costing you money.
Oh, I see.
They are taking up capacity, mental, and operational capacity that you could give to a better client.
It's the opportunity cost.
Precisely. You are blocked from finding a great client because you're too busy servicing a bad one. You have to create the vacuum for the good clients to fill.
Okay, so we've cleaned up the books, we've chased down the cash, and we've fired the bad clients. Now we get to the fun part. Strategy.
Mm.
The source calls this moving beyond wishful thinking.
This is the pivot. Financials are about looking back at what happened. Strategy is about deciding what happens tomorrow.
And it starts with goal setting.
Yeah.
But the source is pretty brutal about how most people set goals. Apparently, I want to grow the business is a terrible goal.
I want to grow isn't a goal. It's daydream. It gives you no direction. It gives your team no direction. The source leans heavily on the SMART framework here.
We've heard this before. Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. But can you give us a concrete example of how to fix a bad goal using this?
Sure. Let's take increased revenue. That's vague. A SMART version would be increase monthly recurring revenue from our subscription services by 25% by the end of Q2.
Okay, I see the difference. It tells you exactly what to focus on subscription services. It tells you how much 25%, and it tells you when.
And because it's measurable, you can track it every week. You know instantly if you're failing. Increased revenue allows you to lie to yourself. Increased subscriptions by 25% forces you to face reality.
So once you have the goal, you need a path to get there. The source outlines a few growth pathways. It's not just sell more stuff.
No, there are nuances. One pathway is market share growth. That's stealing a slice of the pie from your competitors. You do that by differentiation being faster, better, or more unique.
Then there's pricing optimization.
This is the low-hanging fruit that everyone is afraid to touch. Many businesses leave massive amounts of money on the table because they are afraid to raise prices.
Right.
Absolutely. If you haven't raised your rates in 3 years and inflation has gone up, you are effectively taking a pay cut every single day. Sometimes a small price increase goes straight to the bottom line with zero extra effort.
And of course, expansion new products or new markets. But I want to deep dive into something the source highlights about the balance between acquisition and retention.
The critical imbalance.
Most businesses are obsessed with the new logos, new customers, new leads. But the data shows that retaining an existing customer is significantly cheaper than acquiring a new one.
Much cheaper. And this introduces two acronyms that sound like tech jargon, but are actually vital for any business owner to understand. CAC and CLV.
Let's break those down.
CAC. Customer acquisition cost. How much do you spend on marketing, sales, and ads to get one person to buy?
Okay.
And CLV. Customer lifetime value. How much is that person worth to you over the years they stay?
So give me a real-world scenario here.
Okay. Imagine a coffee subscription. Let's say you spend $50 in Facebook ads to get one new subscriber. That's your CAC.
$50.
If that subscriber pays you $10 a month and stays for 2 years, their lifetime value is $240. You spent $50 to make $240. That is a great business.
Okay.
But if you spend $50 to get a customer and they only subscribe for 1 month and then quit, you spent $50 to make $10. You have lost $40.
Ouch.
You don't have a business. You have a very expensive hobby. Sustainable business requires your CAC to be substantially lower than your CLV.
And if you don't know those numbers?
If you don't know those numbers, you can actually grow yourself into bankruptcy. You can sell more and more, but lose money on every single sale.
That is a terrifying thought, growing yourself into bankruptcy. Okay, let's shift gears. We've talked about growth. Now let's talk about defense. Building a fortress.
Resilience. Mm. Because things will go wrong.
The source brings up a rule here called the 20-30% rule. What is this danger zone?
This is about concentration risk. If one customer represents more than 20% to 30% of your total revenue, you are in a danger zone.
Why? That sounds like a great customer.
A whale, right?
It feels great until they leave, or until they go bankrupt, or until they change their strategy and don't need you anymore. If you lose a customer that is 5% of your revenue, it's a bad week. If you lose a customer that is 30% of your revenue, it's an existential crisis. You might have to lay people off. You might miss rent.
And this applies to more than just customers, right?
Absolutely. It applies to products.
Yeah.
If you only sell one thing and consumer tastes shift, you're in trouble. It applies to channels. If your entire business relies on Facebook ads and the algorithm changes tomorrow, you disappear.
You're just gone.
You never want your destiny controlled by a single external switch.
So how do we build a safety net?
Cash reserves.
Yeah.
It's the unsexy answer, but it's the only one that works. The recommendation is to have 3 to 6 months of essential operating expenses sitting in a bank account. 3 to 6 months. That's a lot of cash sitting idle. I can hear entrepreneurs listening to this saying, I should be reinvesting that.
It is hard to do, but it's not just for peace of mind. It's for survival. And frankly, it's for opportunity.
How is it an opportunity?
When a crisis hits, a recession, a pandemic, a supply chain collapse, cash is oxygen. If you have reserves, you can weather the storm while your competitors, who didn't save, are drowning.
Okay, that makes sense.
You can actually gain market share during a downturn if you have the reserves to keep marketing while everyone else pulls back.
That's a powerful perspective. It's not hoarding. It's strategic ammunition. Now, another part of defense is protecting what you own. Not just the physical stuff, but the ideas.
Yeah.
Intellectual property.
Yes. Trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets.
I think a lot of small business owners glaze over this. They think, I'm not Coca-Cola. I don't need a trademark.
And that is a dangerous mindset. Trademarks protect your brand identity, your name, your logo. If you build a reputation for 5 years and someone else registers your name, they can force you to rebrand. You lose everything you built. Copyrights protect your creative works. And trade secrets protect your processes, the secret sauce of how you do what you do. If you don't legally protect these, you are essentially donating your hard work to the public domain.
The source also suggests playing a game called What If?
Contingency planning. It's a mental exercise, but a vital one. What if your main supplier goes bust? What if the internet goes down for a week?
What if your key employee wins the lottery and quits tomorrow?
The lottery scenario? I like that better than gets hit by a bus.
Much more pleasant.
But the point is, you need to document the plan before the crisis hits. When the supplier fails, you don't want to be frantically Googling alternatives with your hair on fire. You want to pull out a binder that says Plan B Alternate Suppliers and just execute.
Preparation kills panic.
Exactly. Panic is the enemy of good decision making.
So we've got the money sorted, the strategy set, and the fortress built. But none of this happens without people. Let's talk about the human element.
The engine of the business.
The source makes a distinction between strategic hiring and skill development. It seems like the default answer to growth is usually, we need to hire more people.
It is, but that's often the expensive and slow route. The source suggests looking internally first. Can you train the team you already have?
Why is that better?
Well, investing in skill development creates loyalty. People want to grow. If you show them a path to upgrade their skills, they stay longer and work harder. Plus, they already know the culture.
Right, they know the system.
They know how the coffee machine works. Bringing in a stranger is always a risk. Upgrading a loyal employee is usually a win.
Now, speaking of people, the source has a section on external brains. I love this concept that the business owner doesn't need to know everything.
No business owner can know everything. You need a constellation of advisors.
We talked about accountants earlier regarding the books. But here, the source emphasizes that an accountant isn't just for taxes.
No, a good accountant is a business advisor. They can help you model out those what-if scenarios we talked about. They can tell you if your margins are healthy compared to industry standards.
So use them.
If you only talk to your accountant once a year at tax time, you are wasting that relationship.
And then there are peer networks, masterminds.
This is huge. Being a business owner or a leader is incredibly lonely. You can't complain to your employees, and your spouse probably is tired of hearing about it.
Definitely.
A mastermind is a group of peers, other business owners, who meet regularly to discuss challenges.
How is that different from just going to a networking mixer?
Intent. In networking, everyone is hunting. They're trying to sell you something or hand out business cards.
True.
In a mastermind, there is no profit motive between members. It's pure support. If you're struggling with an employee issue, chances are someone else in that room dealt with the exact same thing last year.
So you get to learn from their mistakes.
You get to borrow their experience without paying the stupid tax of making the mistake yourself.
Stupid tax. I'm going to use that. And finally, partnerships. This isn't just about finding a co-founder, right?
No, it's about complementary businesses. Let's say you're a web designer. You could partner with a copywriter.
Oh, I see.
You refer clients to them. They refer clients to you. Together, you offer a comprehensive solution. A full website package without you having to learn how to write copy.
Guess
this leverage. You grow your offering without growing your payroll.
Okay, let's unpack this all. We've gone from the nitty-gritty of reconciling bank statements to the high-level strategy of masterminds and contingency plans.
It's a journey.
It really is. We started with that psychological trigger, the year-end reset. We cleaned up the financial garbage, set smart goals that aren't just wishful thinking, built a safety net of cash and IP protection, and surrounded ourselves with the right people.
When you lay it out like that, it sounds like a lot of work.
It does. It feels like a mountain.
But the source reminds us, business is a marathon, not a sprint. You don't have to do all of this by Friday.
Right. It's about execution over time. The source explicitly says that plans mean nothing without execution. You can have the most beautiful color-coded binder in the world, but if it stays on the shelf, you're still just surviving.
You aren't thriving.
And that connects back to where we started, that artificial constraint. Use the deadline to start the execution. Take one step. Momentum is everything.
It is.
Before we go, there's one final concept from the source that I found really provocative. It's a challenge to a listener. It's about scenario planning, but on a deeper level.
Yes. This is about testing your resilience against multiple futures. We tend to plan for the future we want.
We plan for 10% growth.
We plan for sunny days. But the source asks, plan for multiple futures.
So not just predicting one path.
Right. Ask yourself, if your revenue dropped 20% tomorrow, would your plan survive? That's the scary one. But also, and people forget this one, if your revenue grew 50% overnight, would you survive?
That's a great question. We assume growth is always good.
Yeah.
But can growth actually break a business?
Easily. If you got 50% more orders tomorrow, would your systems collapse? Would your quality tank? Would your staff burn out and quit?
Would you run out of cash trying to buy inventory?
Exactly. Scenario planning means being ready for success just as much as failure.
That is something I want you, the listener, to really sit with today. Look at your current plan. Does it only work if everything goes perfectly? Or is it flexible enough? Is it resilient enough to handle a sudden boom or a sudden bust?
It's about building a vehicle that can drive off-road, not just on a smooth highway, because business is definitely off-road driving.
I love that visual. Mm-hmm. So here is your mission for today. Don't try to overhaul the whole company in an afternoon. Just pick one thing we discussed.
Just one.
Maybe it's creating those three expense buckets. Maybe it's making that awkward phone call to an overdue client. Or maybe it's writing down just one smart goal for the next quarter.
Just start. Action creates clarity.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for diving in with us.
Always a pleasure.
And to you listening, go create those intentional pathways. We'll see you on the next deep dive.